Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Now, when you use promo code DNVR and make a $5 NBA Moneyline bet, new customers, you can get $200 in free bets if your team wins. That's with code DNVR only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. I am your host, Patrick Lyons, and joining me today is the return of AJ. Coincidentally, it's also your handle on Twitter. It's AJ Hafley from the Colorado Avalanche beat. What's going on, buddy?
What's up, man? How are you?
Doing well. We've got a big game three to break down. This is probably the wrong day that you wanted to jump on the pod, but look, we booked it in advance, so we didn't know.
Yeah, the rain out put us in a tough spot there. Watching the game last night, I was like, this sucks. I have to relive this tomorrow.
Yes, but you're a man of your word. You came through here. We'll talk about the Astros' legacy in general too. I you got the smile on your face, so you are ready. This will be okay. Well, it'll be soft, but we actually got some Rockies news, and it's positive. The members only Discord that we've got for members of the DNVR.com. Very excited. Brendan Rodgers, NL Gold Glove Award winner at second base. Did this take you a little bit by surprise? Obviously, he was a finalist along with Ryan McMahon, but did you think that he could possibly win this award?
At the start of the year, I would have said no, but as the year went on, I think anybody that was actually paying attention knew that the Rodgers had really grown into the position, and it, you know, so much was made of his bat throughout the year and how he had such a horrible start to the season, and not enough got made of the defense. And you know, we're also in this weird era where, like, winning a Gold Glove is neat, but how important really is defense in baseball? And you look at the team that's two wins from the World Series. You know, they were regularly butchers in the field throughout the regular season. So. Rodgers was exceptional this year defensively, and I think absolutely was a worthy winner, and I wasn't surprised when he actually did win it. And it just sort of continues this really weird legacy of Rockies just winning Gold Gloves. Like, they seem to have one or two exceptional defenders hanging around on their roster at all times.
Yeah, I love the comment from Henry in our chat. Again, if you're listening to this as a podcast, great. But you can also go over to the DNVR Sports channel over on YouTube to follow along. Leave some comments. Henry pointing out, 22 defensive run saves for Rodgers, led all second basemen. So that's a statistic that when they give it to coaches, 7 per team. You can't vote for your own guys. The manager gets 1, 6 coaches get to vote. That's one of those pieces of data that's right on there on the paper. And so, you know, if you're a coaching staff that has a lot of things going on, you might just look at that number and just straight up say, well, hey, according to this one defensive metric, he deserved it. So the metrics liked him more than not, outs above average, you know, maybe not as favorable, but, you know, led all second basemen in diving plays. And as you point out, AJ, like, you know, he had a rough start. And I think a lot of his offensive woes he brought out into the field with him defensively a little bit, maybe trying to do a bit too much. But Stu Cole there rallying the entire infield with his wonderful ground ball machine, which I hope we get to see again next year. He's not going to be operating it, but really working hard with the young guys, Montero, Hampson, obviously Brendan Rodgers here, and that translating to the Gold Glove, and talking with him this past year, article in September, all about his transition to second base. We think of shortstops being, you know, transitioning to second base as it being an easy transition. And I think if you're a shortstop, you obviously have a certain amount of athleticism, but there are details that go into playing a quality second base, the angles of the throw, the going over to second base. Now you're going to your right in a much different capacity. You can't see the runner like you could before. And so there are all those elements that I think take a little bit of time. And, you know, it's almost been the story of Brendan Rodgers' career. Hey, we'd like for you to develop a little bit quicker than you have. But bottom line is he is coming along at his pace, and that's all right.
Yeah, I mean, the when you're talking about that transition, I always think about that I went on a date once many, many years ago with the girl. We went bowling, and for fun, I decided to try and bowl left-handed, and I'm right-handed. So when I was trying to do it, all of my steps were backwards. All the footwork is backwards. And when you're trying to transition from shortstop to second base, it's kind of the same thing, that all of your footwork, especially when you're going to the bag and you're trying, you know, double plays and things like that, all of it is backwards. You spent your whole life doing it on one side and then you do it on the other side. It's just a totally different experience.
I love that analogy too, because, you know, people might say, yeah, well, they're a professional athlete, but something as basic as that, where, you know, a lot of people bowl their entire life. I come up from a bowling background, and it's just, you're taking steps, but you actually have to consciously think something as basic as that. Well, what's my first step? And then how long is each step? And that coordination for something as basic as dropping a bowling ball behind you, bringing it forward, having a straight arm. It's so basic, and yet it takes time to develop. That was the case with Rodgers here.
Yeah. The basics helped me too. I actually bowled better left-handed that night than I did right-handed. So that was great.
Wow. It's working out for AJ. It's working out for Brendan Rodgers, first infielder to win a Gold Glove with the Rockies since, no surprise, Nolan Arenado back in 2020. First second baseman to do it since 2018, DJ LeMahieu. He's the eighth player in Rockies history to win a Gold Glove. Everyone that has won a Gold Glove, except Nathy Perez, has more than one. So it'll be interesting to see if he goes the Nathy Perez route and only wins the one, or if he wins multiples like Tulowitzki, Cargo, Helton, as well as Larry Walker, Arenado, LeMahieu there. So that was nice to see. And Arenado, of course, continues his streak, 10 consecutive. Did you think this might have been the year, perhaps, AJ, that Arenado did not get the Gold Glove, either because of McMahon or Cabrian Hayes, the other two finalists in the National League at third base?
I really thought last year might have been the year. Where it was, there was a chance because the door was open. A lot of the numbers weren't really in his favor, but they were good enough that it was just like, oh, Nolan, give it to him. I'm not surprised. Unless Ryan McMahon does something truly superhuman over there, he's not going to beat out Nolan Arenado for a Gold Glove. They just won't do it, especially with the streak and everything else. There's no way. I just don't think that there's any way that Ryan McMahon has a real shot at that.
You have to beat the champ. You have to, like, definitively do it.
Like, barring something like really, really, really special, or, you know, like a year where they have a good excuse not to give it to Nolan, you know, like he gets hurt and he misses half the season or something, like, you know, not rooting for that, obviously. I'm just saying, it would. I think that's where it's going to take something like that to happen, to give them the opportunity to just say, somebody else has a shot at this.
Yeah, 10 to start his career. That ties Ichiro Suzuki. Slightly different situation there, as Ichiro was already a professional at that point. I think he was 26 years old for his first Gold Glove campaign there in right field. Ties with Michael. Yeah, ties with Michael Jack Schmidt for second most all time there at third base with the 10. He's only behind Brooks Robinson at 16. Man, even though he's done it every single year, he's still six away from tying. Yeah. I tend to think, no, he's probably not going to. That just seems almost an impossibility, doesn't it?
I mean, I would have said 10 to start his career was pretty unlikely, especially watching him as a prospect back in the day. I would have said that was really unlikely. So, I'm not going to count the guy out.
Yeah, it could require that, like you said, superhuman feat a little bit. The metrics that we know that are out there for defense, you know, they're not the greatest. I don't think we've had them fine-tuned. I think all 30 teams, or maybe at least 29, probably have really good analytics departments and have really good defensive metrics, way better than the public-facing ones. And so they might have a much better idea. But you're right. If you just think about the highlight plays, like how many Gold Gloves did Jim Edmonds end up winning just because he was really good at timing out those full extension grabs. And not to say that Arenado does that at all, but I very much think he positions himself on the field to make a lot of those plays down the line, similar to like Brooks Robinson used to make very frequently in the World Series, those barehanded grabs. And someone who's watched Ryan McMahon his entire career, I don't see him making as many as those plays. That being said, where he is positioned maybe a little bit further back, he's stealing a couple doubles and a couple base hits that might get by someone like a Nolan Arenado. So, you know, the defensive metrics, sometimes they might help out and show those things, whereas the highlights make you feel, wait a minute, just look at Nolan Arenado. Look at the plays he's making, the plays that Ryan McMahon is making. They don't look flashy. It's just because he's well positioned on the field and he's gobbling up and supporting his team defensively a little bit more in the long run than someone like Nolan Arenado. So that's a big thing to possibly overcome to win a Gold Glove against this guy who's, you know, an entity in and of himself.
Yeah. I mean, he's a titan at the position. To beat him out for a Gold Glove, you would basically be stealing history. So, and I think that, I just don't know. Baseball's that kind of sport where I don't think that people want to do that. I think they want to continue to give it to Nolan every year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fair. That's an easy thing to do, right? Like, again, you've got to be head and shoulders above the rest to possibly get that. And so Cabrian Hayes, he's made a case. We'll see what happens next year. McMahon.
He's really special.
He is. He's just got to keep himself healthy, I think. And the Pirates need to be somewhat, you know, more relevant so that people are watching his games.
Yeah.
In order for him to get that kind of
good luck with that
acknowledgement. Yeah, good luck indeed. It's kind of funny. Rogers wins the Gold Glove at second base, as we said, first since 2018 as far as second baseman goes. DJ LeMahieu wins a Gold Glove over in the American League. Do you know what position he won the Gold Glove award for, AJ? I don't know if you saw this.
I didn't look at this.
He didn't win it for second base. He didn't win it for third base. He didn't win it for first base. He technically won it for all of them. He won the Utility Player Award. It's a brand new award they gave out this year for a player that ultimately doesn't have a true home. So he's the first one in the American League Utility Player, because, you know, he did bounce around a little bit, didn't have the opportunity in Colorado. Arenado was there. Didn't really need him over there at first base quite as much, but he wins the first American League Utility Player Award, which was pretty
cool idea.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's very fitting to have that. There are a couple guys that got nominated, I think, as like second baseman and utility player. So they might need to work those kinks out in there. But I do like that idea of someone who's, you know, maybe doesn't have that true home. And again, if you're looking only at defensive run saves, you say, oh, this guy was fifth in defensive run saves at second base and fifth at third base. Well, you put those two together, he might be the best defensive player in all of the game. Boom, now you got the utility player award.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ben Zobrist was kind of a unicorn back in the day when he sort of started this trend. And then, you know, you end up with a guy like even Chris Bryant, you know, before he got to Colorado, was, you know, he was moved around quite a bit. And this whole concept of like a utility guy, a guy that would just fill in all over your roster, became a pretty normal thing in baseball. And I think rewarding that guy instead of punishing that guy with an opportunity like a Gold Glove, because come contract time, you know, guys are going to appreciate having the extra opportunity to add something to the old resume there.
That's it. Yeah, LeMahieu's got his money with the Yankees. But to your point, AJ, Brendan Donovan, he won the National League Utility Award yesterday. First rookie in the National League to win a Gold Glove since Nolan Arenado again. Damn, we just keep coming back to this guy. 2013, he won it his rookie season. He also had Jeremy Pena and Stephen Kwan of the Guardians, both winning as rookies in the American League at shortstop and left field, respectively. So 14 first-time winners there at the Gold Glove. It's nice to see that kind of get spread around a little bit to guys that are deserving rather than just the teams that we know, the big market clubs.
Yeah, and Gold Glove has always been the one that it was a good cop-out to just give it to the same guys all the time because it's hard. It's hard to figure out.
Rafael Palmeiro, anybody? 1999?
Derek Jeter win Gold Gloves?
Yeah, that too. Not as egregious. I mean, he at least did play shortstop. But yes, absolutely. I would wholeheartedly agree with that. And I would agree with anybody hanging down on the corner of Colfax in York at the DNVR bar, especially when you consider when you're a member, you get yourself 15% off your bill. Like, that's insane to even think of. That's going to pay for your membership in and of itself. But of course, we're going to give you some wonderful content from the Broncos, Nuggets, Rockies. AJ's writing some bangers over there all about the Avalanche. We got to talk about what's going on right now with the Avalanche because they are not on this continent right now. We'll break that down in a second. You can get all that information and more in our members-only Discord. We don't have to worry about politics or a-holes, anything like that. And if you're ready to go all in on that annual membership, you do get a free shirt from dnvrlocker.com. It's football season. As we know, Broncos coming off a big win over in London. We had all kinds of wonderful coverage from that on just about all across social media, as well as our site. Some great articles written up by Henry Chisholm, Zach Stevens, Ryan Konigsberg. Great stuff. Broncos Country Pale Ale. It's the hometown craft beer of the Denver Broncos. Show off that colorful Colorado legacy with the Orange Crush logo and 100% Colorado ingredients. My favorite part, keeping it in state. Your go-to for football season. Check out the beer locator at www.breckbrew.com to find a Broncos Country Pale Ale near you. And if you're in on the NBA, basketball we know is back, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA, is hooking up new customers whereby you can win $200 in free bets if your team wins when you make any $5 NBA money line bet. It's that simple. And everyone, you can also boost your winnings up to 100%. That's double. With DraftKings stepped up same game parlays, you can opt in, place a stepped up same game parlay today. Payouts are bigger than ever. DraftKings Sportsbook is where I go to bet on the NBA and to bet on the World Series. We'll talk about if I was right about game one. Look, I was right. I had the Phillies, believe it or not, doing that. Even though I said Houston in five games, AJ, I'm very inconsistent, but it allows me to cover all my bases so that I can win more money and feel like I'm always right, especially with DraftKings Sportsbook, and especially when you use promo code DNVR, because any $5 NBA Moneyline bet this week is going to get you $200 in free bets if your team wins, only at DraftKings Sportsbook with promo code DNVR. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. AJ, you are one of the few people yesterday to not homer off Lance McCullers Jr. What went wrong for you yesterday in Game 3?
Well, I didn't have an at-bat. Otherwise, I would have had a shot at it, man. I would have liked my chances. All this talk about tipping pitches and stuff, man, I don't know. Lance McCullers just kind of wilts in the World Series, honestly. It's like this every year, which is a weird thing to say about the World Series. Like, oh, yeah, every time we get back to it, we're here again. I don't know. I'm not the world's biggest Lance McCullers fan, so I think that it's a what went wrong is Lance McCullers pitched. And
yeah, it was a historic performance, but for all the wrong reasons. First pitch of the game. This game was a lot about first, both historically and first pitches. First pitch of the game, Altuve goes opposite way. Nick Castellanos with another gem of a grab. Love that sliding catch. This is kind of, he's going to get a nice little bobblehead or something, because he's always on his butt making those sliding catches. It seems like this postseason, he's been fantastic. And then first pitch that Bryce Harper sees, first pitch he sees in Philadelphia in the World Series, home run. That set the tone. I think four of his six postseason home runs so far this postseason have given the Phillies a lead. He is otherworldly.
It's a great picture. The guy standing up in the front row with the blue shirt, I think is all of us. Yeah, good and bad. If you're excited, you're like, oh my God. And if it's bad, you're like, oh my God.
Mouth agape. Yes. Yeah, for sure. His last two swings, folks, at Citizens Bank Park, you've got that home run in game five to clinch the NL pennant in the bottom of the eighth. And then that first pitch yesterday, two-run home run against Houston. The one of my favorite comments of the entire postseason, and this is something I haven't been able to articulate, so I can't say he took the words out of my mouth. He just took the entire sentiment of anyone that bitches and complains, which we know happens in sports, over the silliest things that very much we know is meaningless. Mike Petriello says, you know, I really wish we'd gotten to see Ranger Suarez hit there instead of DH Bryce Harper. And that, I mean, underlines the whole conversation of, well, but the pitcher should hit in the National League. Stop. Please stop. The DH, both leagues, it's fine. I haven't heard too many people complaining about it this year, to be honest. But before it's happened, a lot of complaining, and then everyone immediately goes quiet when they realize, yeah, no one wants to see the pitcher hit. No one wants a pinch hitter coming off the bench in the fifth inning. Oh, does he or doesn't he? No one cares about that. That's never a part of a highlight, ever. This is. It's the designated hitter. It's a big home run. Let's drop that conversation.
Bryce Harper, I think, is just he's amazing, man. For a guy to have come into the sport with the hype that he did, he hasn't, like, taken over. Like, I think some people might have thought, you know, with several MVP run, you know, and this, like, dominant singular career, but he's on the, you know, he's two wins away from a second World Series title with two different franchises. I just kind of tip my cap to that guy. The pressure that he's faced his entire life, you know, being the prodigy, being compared, you know, he was the LeBron James of baseball back in the day. Like, he's on the cover of Sports Illustrated as a 16-year-old. You know, guy is reclassifying, not so that he can go to college earlier, but so that he can go to community college to be drafted. Like, the guy, he just, his whole path and then living up to it and changing his game as the game kind of changed around him, as it became, you know, the launch angle era and all that, it kind of took off, and he became more of a home run focused hitter. And I don't know. I just, he is, I know he's a kind of a divisive polarizing player in the baseball landscape, but as somebody who's like, baseball is like their second sport in their daily life. Like, he's definitely a guy that I appreciate. I love watching him play. I still don't know how he threw the helmet so poorly at whatever that Giants pitcher's name
was.
Hunter Strickland, yeah. I'll always remember it, though. It's great, but I don't know. I love Bryce Harper. I just want to say, like, I understand I'm on the other side of the fence on this with the Astros and all that, but just as if they're going to lose to the Phillies, like, losing to Bryce Harper doesn't bother me that much.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this World Series is interesting for both sides, both dugouts, you know, the Astros legacy. And we'll talk about that here in a bit. And then Harper too. I think this could be a moment where that flips. You're right. I think he's been maybe controversial in the past. Why? doesn't actually make sense. He's never really done much to say, oh, Bryce Harper is a jerk. Again, he's at the forefront and he's a name. The biggest thing that you would maybe point to say, like, all right, where's the anti Harper sentiment? That would be some of his peers who I think ahead of the 2019 season, you know, voted him as the most overrated player. But those are his peers that have been hearing about him for over a decade, as you said, being on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He was even mentioned in the New York Times at 13 years old. And you say, like, okay, you understand that. But what has this guy necessarily done wrong? And here he is with Philadelphia lifting his team, going to a city that hadn't, you know, made the postseason in close to a decade when he signed that deal. And we saw it in this game too, because right there at the beginning of the second inning, he says, hey, Alec Bohm, come here for a second. I got to tell you something. I want you to get in on this too. We're up 2-0. And I think we're not going to give up another run for the rest of this game, which they did not do. So he could have had all the plaudits in the world and it could have been another Bryce Harper game, but he didn't make it about that. He says, Bohm, I got to tell you something. We don't know what he said, but we do know the result. First pitch, boom. By Bohm, he goes deep there with a big home run, and that's the first of two. That was actually the 1,000th home run in World Series history, which is interesting. Ken Rosenthal asking Bohm, hey, so what did Harper say? He's got to ask the question, but of course, you know, Bohm just says, yeah, that's between us, and shrugs. Brendan Marsh does it later in the inning with a solo shot, made it 4-0, and it becomes the first time in World Series history a team has homered 3 times in the first 2 innings. Lance McCullers tipping pitches. I've heard some people say not necessarily, because those you know, those images in the video of him throwing pitches, one he was in the stretch, one was in the windup, so maybe that has something to do with it. But bottom line, look, they had his number. And even after the game, McCullers and Dusty Baker, you know, could have maybe gotten him off the hook just a little bit and said, no, I don't think it was tipping pitches at all. I just sucked. He didn't say sucked, but
I just got teed off on.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I, you know, they got rocked, man. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. Do you think that maybe Dusty maybe should have gotten the hook a little bit quicker? Did have 2 scoreless innings there in the third and the fourth for McCullers. But by the point Marsh hit the home run and it's 4-0, you've got a loaded bullpen of relievers that can shut the Phillies offense down. Would that have maybe been the better moment to just take him out right there at the bottom of the second inning?
Yeah. I mean, I would say in both games 1 and 3, you could make that argument that, you know, hey man, you do have a loaded bullpen that has been dominant this postseason.
Rested.
It's been very, very, very good this postseason. And what are you doing here, man? Like, why are we, you know, this, in some ways it's kind of refreshing, because watching Fromber just dominate for 7 innings and throw 100 pitches every time he goes out there, and you know, it's a great joy of my life. But Watching him stick with the starter a little bit too long in the other, it's like, God, come on. But of course, that's always hindsighty, right? Like, you're talking about the guy that's going to win the Cy Young in Verlander and Lance McCullers, who's, as much as I don't personally like Lance McCullers that much, he's a pretty good pitcher. But it is odd to me that, hey man, you have a great bullpen. What are we doing here?
Use it. Yeah. Well rested too, right? Like, they haven't thrown too many pitches in the past month.
On the other hand, you know, he isn't stretching that bullpen out. He isn't putting him in a situation where they could be in a really tough spot. You know, if they had pitched, you know, 7 innings yesterday, you know, you go through a lot of arms, you don't know how that goes, and your offense didn't score any runs anyway. So looking back on it, it's like, well, it ended up that game was already lost. It didn't matter. So, hey, maybe he just saved the arms.
Yeah, bottom of the fifth is where it really went topsy-turvy there. Kyle Schwarber with an enormous 2-run home run. Mound visit, I imagine, just said, hey, don't give up another home run. Unfortunately, McCullers Jr. did not heed that warning. And then Reese Hoskins, solo home run 5 home runs through the first 5 innings, a World Series first. Only the 4th time in World Series history a team had hit 5 homers in a game. The last was the 2017 Astros. The 89 A's did it, as well as the 1928 Yankees. 1 year after, the Murderers Row Yankees, Babe Ruth hit 3 in that game. And of course, this is the first time ever one pitcher had given up 5 home runs. Before that, I think 3 other guys had given up 4. So, wrong side of history in more ways than one for Lance McCullers.
Oh, I mean, that's where the Astros end up.
Yeah, you know, not
wrong.
Not
wrong side of history is kind of the legacy that they're starting to leave now.
Sure. 4 1/3 innings pitched, 6 hits, 7 runs total, 1 walk, 5 Ks. On the flip side, Ranger Suarez, very solid. 5 innings pitched, 3 hits, did not give up a run, walked 1, struck out 4. Only the 2nd scoreless performance by a starter in 40 of the Phillies World Series games, the other Curt Schilling in 1993. So he looked good. He pitched in game 1. This was one of the benefits, if you will, for the Phillies with the rain out. It allowed them to kind of reset their rotation just a little bit. Suarez was going to be pitching on Tuesday regardless, but now it's game 3. Now you got Nola in game 4. Wheeler's ready in game 6. So they've got it lined up the way they really would like to.
Good for them.
So maybe now is the time to kind of, you know, get your opinion on the Astros and everything that this run to the World Series means, because we know in 17-18 there was, you know, much discussion from the commissioner, and you know, a lot of teams were cheating, a lot of teams were misbehaving. Let's phrase it that way. In fact, actually, even before we get into our conversation, I want to let you know about game time tickets, because this is going to be a long conversation, and this is as quick and easy as you can get. 60% up, 60% off, up to that much. When you wait close to the tip off, first pitch, puck drop, it's happening for World Series games too. You can do this. So if you're in the area and you're on the fence about attending something, use Game Time tickets. It's fantastic. I've done it for shows over at Red Rocks. I've done it for games at Ball Arena. And you can get really good seats too on the 50-yard line, courtside floor seats for a concert, you name it. Cool thing is, you should use the link in our description to save, because that ends up helping us out. They've been doing this for a very long time. 50 million people have downloaded the Game Time app, so you definitely should do it too. AJ, I don't know if you've gotten a tour of the Hassell Cattle Company plant there in Texas. I know you're from there, so perhaps you've vetted them really well, because the product that we get is fantastic. They can ship to anywhere in the U.S. I love their American Wagyu. They call it the blue-collar American Wagyu because it's top shelf, but it's affordable. You know, home chefs, they love to use that. We love it at our tailgates too. So we got, if you come on out to any of the Broncos games, party with us over at DNVR and enjoy a delicious smoked stuffed sausage off the grill at our Broncos tailgates. Head over to HasselCattleCompany.com, HASSELL, cattlecompany.com, to secure your bag of beef and use code DNVR20 for 20% off your entire purchase. That's DNVR20 for 20% off. AJ, it seems... It's going to take a while for some people really to bury the whole concept of the sign stealing and the banging scandal. But do you think this run to the World Series has really quieted some people that are on the fence to say, you know what, 3 hitters are still around, right? It's still Altuve, Bregman, and Gurriel. But for the most part, you know, this is a different team. This is a different group of players, coaching staff, front office to a degree as well. And let's go ahead and kind of, Let's forgive them, so to speak. Let's put that in the past. Do you think that this run has done that just a little bit?
No. No, I don't think so, because Neanderthals don't care about nuance. And so they're just gonna see the red meat and they're gonna scream and holler about it and be mad about it forever. And me personally, I don't care. I know that most of the Astros fan base, I don't, you know. It's not a fan base that I could say that I resonate a lot with, because I don't have any Astros fans friends. I don't live there anymore. You know, like, it's not, I'm not super well connected, but I'd be willing to bet that they all feel pretty similarly as I do. Y'all can either get over it, and you can keep being mad about something you can't change. It's up to you. Yeah. Whatever you do with your time and how you spend your energy, your call. For me, I don't give a shit either way.
Yeah, I think an average sports fan, maybe even the average baseball fan, might hold, you know, the sign stealing scandal, you know, against this current, you know, team of players. I think it's more likely average sports fan. I think if you're an average baseball fan, you can kind of get past it. You're going to bring it up. Yeah, you almost have to mention it just to say, hey, I know my history. I know what went on. But you also know that other teams were doing it. You also know there's, you know, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. And yes, I think the idea that, you know, they were tanking on top of it, it's almost like, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice. You're not going to fool me twice. And that fits in very well with the location of the person who said that down there in Texas. But the bottom line is, like, you know what? We don't want them to get away with it. And what's done is done. You know, the commissioner stripped him of some draft picks and back-to-back years. Probably wasn't harsh enough. You know, the penalties that didn't really get doled out to really any players. Carlos Beltran was really the only guy that got punished.
You know, they had to make a choice. They could either tell the story. They could either get the story about what really happened and who was involved, and the punishments couldn't be doled out because of the agreements that they made to get the story. Or they would have an inconclusive investigation. Guys weren't going to roll over on teammates and whatever without some promise of immunity there. And that was it. They had to make a choice. People can continue to be mad about the punishments, but I don't know what you wanted them to do. You either have an inconclusive investigation and everybody feels gross about it, and nothing gets done, and we just sort of sit with this, like, Barry Bondsian, we know this shit happened, but couldn't quite get there to proving that, you know, that it went down. Or, you know, where it was definitively, conclusively proven that it took place. We got juicy details of it, but punishments were not meted out in such a way that were satisfactory to people. I just, for me, that's always been a point of contention. Just that they had to make a choice there. They had to decide which one of those routes that they were going to live with. And for people to continue to hold that against baseball is, like, they were in a lose-lose spot there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, you said something there about, you know, talking about the story. You know, what is the story? It is the story that the Astros were out on an island unto themselves doing this thing that nobody else was doing, or were they just, you know, not the ringleader, but were they the face of it? Much like Barry Bonds was the face of the steroid era. Yeah. There is a much bigger story there. So if you were going to tell that whole story, it was going to go beyond what happened in the Astros clubhouse. It would go to a lot of other teams. And I fair to say it very well could have been all 30 teams doing that in some shape or form to varying degrees. And that's a story that Major League Baseball doesn't want to get out. So you know what?
Exactly.
Hey, Astros.
Exactly.
You were the ones who were doing it. We're going to, you know, give you that slap on the wrist so that it looks good enough for just about everybody. And we as a sport are going to move on. The Astros, you know, they're put up on the cross for that. And so they have to bear that. But then all the other 29 teams in the sport in general can kind of move on. And that's kind of how it's played out. So really, it's worked out for MLB in that way. Not as much for the Astros or for people who have been upset by that. And again, Astros become the poster boy for it, and
And baseball needed that. They needed a villain to be. Scapegoat. They needed a central villain. It's not even really a scapegoat. They did it. They cheated. They got caught. Like, the works. Those things happened. But they needed that the villain. They needed a prime villain. You know, Batman needs Joker. Otherwise, he's just beating up people in an alley. You know what I mean? Like, MLB was not going to go through 30 clubhouses, dig up all the secrets, and be like, hey, look at this huge, huge amount of cheating that has been going on league-wide. It wasn't just the Astros. That would not have been productive for anybody. It wouldn't have been productive for the game, and nobody would have felt good about it. You know, everybody would have turned on everybody, and it would have ripped at the internal fabric of the sport. Instead, we get a nice, tidy cheating scandal. Astros bad. And that's where we are. And that's, look, for me, I can live with it. Organizations, unfortunately, this is the reality of sports. Organizations get caught on a regular basis doing things. You know, we literally, like, this week, we had a tampering thing in the NBA that came down about the 76ers talking to free agents early and stuff, which, whatever, who cares?
Slap on, right? Like, second round. Whoa.
Losing second round picks for a team that thinks it's a title contender. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Anyway, these things happen. And I think that the whole cheating thing for the Astros, it's, I think what really sucks from my perspective, from our perspective, from the Houston side of this, is that they've been in 6 league championship series in a row. They've made 4 out of 6 World Series. And the only one that they've won is the one attached to the cheating scandal. They could win just one without it. It's the ultimate, like, we didn't need that. But if it gets to this era ends, however many years, you know, I don't know how many more years in a row you can really expect them to keep going to the World Series. But whenever this era comes to an end and we get to the, you know, we get to the end of it and we look back on it, and if that's the only World Series that they will have won, it's tainted. And if they win 2, if they get a second one, the first one, it's tainted still, but you still look at the era and say, that's still one of the great eras, one of the great, like, teams, one of the best run organizations for that era of time.
Yeah, I would even claim to say that they're kind of already there now in that dynasty mold. I mean, think, you know, in baseball,
you can't have that, though. You can't be considered any kind of a dynasty if you only have one chip. You know, we look at the Atlanta Braves winning a decade's worth of divisions in a row, and the Smoltz and Glavine and Maddox era, those three guys. We look at that and we always lament one World Series. You only got one out of that. You got those three guys. You got Chipper Jones. You got Andrew. You know, you got Andrew Jones in the in center field. Like, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I can go one further and say the Buffalo Bills never won a Super Bowl in the 90s, but they went
exactly
4 consecutive Super Bowls. But there's something dynastic about that. It's, you know,
it's
I know
a great
what you're
accomplishment
saying.
If, yeah. To make 4 out of 6 World Series in a modern era and not be and because they aren't one of these teams that is printing money. Right. You know, they aren't the Yankees. They aren't the Dodgers. They don't have the same financial power. Carlos Correa walked in the offseason. They've had to make hard decisions. They've had to replace guys internally, Kyle Tucker and the Jeremy Peñas of the world. You know, like, they've had to come up with their own prospects and their own, you know, they've lost so many guys in free agency that they've had to make financial decisions with. It's not that I'm crying poor here. Don't get me wrong. It's not the case. But they are not in that same class where they can just be like, yeah, we'll just throw money at this problem. And, oh, we're going to have a luxury tax issue? Oh, okay, well, that's fine too. Like, they don't live in that world, so they have to continue to be well-run. They have to continue to find solutions here. And it will take away from it if they don't get another title. Yeah. It will be a big pockmark on just that this era of baseball where you look at a team and there will be no appreciation because of the cheating, and because the cheating happened at the start of it, there will be no appreciation whatsoever, even though it should help it. If say this, there was a 6-year run and the cheating scandal happened at the end of it, you could be looking at the whole thing and going, God, how long has this been going on? How much of this is tainted? Instead, it happened at the start of their run, this run that they've had. And instead, I in my mind, it should be like, look, it happened, and then they put a stop to it, and look at how special this run has been since. But instead, it's like they're cheaters, and they're just cheaters. And, like, that's perception, and that's just the way that it is these days. They aren't going to be able to walk around that, but they need the second title to validate it, in my opinion. They need a second title.
I think you're right in, from the perspective of this. The second championship clears it up for anyone who's maybe not paying attention quite as much like that. That helps settle that debate. But as you pointed out, the fact that they lost Garrett Cole after 2019 and lost George Springer after 2020 and lost Carlos Correa after 2021 last season, and yet they were able to find these internal replacements, that has nothing to do with stealing signs. That's player development. That is getting creative. That is making good trades. A lot of which those players that they traded away or acquired, again, has nothing to do with sign stealing. It might have to do with tanking. That might have to do with building up a really good farm system, doing a good job internationally. That's where they deserve that credit. And how, you know, again, player development and trading and drafting and sign stealing are two different things. Sign stealing helps you in a game in and of itself. Doesn't magically, you know, give you or make better players in the moment, but not, you know, 3-4 years down the line, as they've been able to prove. And because there's such, you know, general parity in baseball from the aspect of, again, every year you look at the World Series and it's like, you just don't even see teams going back to the World Series in back-to-back years, let alone winning it.
It's the Astros playing the NL darling of the year. The team that comes out of the NL gets really hot and is the team of destiny gets to go beat the Astros that year. Yeah. Oh, hey, look, here we are.
And in the last decade, I mean, again, what team has had that much success? It's for that reason why I kind of put that dynasty tag a little bit on the Astros. So
it's fascinating because I think you've got two franchises that are kind of having all-time great runs.
Yeah.
You've got the Dodgers in the NL, but their only World Series win is the COVID year, is the year where they only played 60 games or whatever. And part of the hard part of winning a World Series is it's grueling. You've got it. You've April till November. It's a long process. And for them to have only gotten that one title so far during that time. And it's from the Dodgers case, though. I mean, it's not even like they're making the World Series every year.
No,
you know, no. Like they're, yeah. Oh, can they even get out of the first round they're allowed to play in? So, which glorious that they continue to just light money on fire. Glorious. But with it's interesting to see those parallels where the Dodgers, like, because if you're talking about two teams that are having tremendous amount of success, you know, the Astros aren't winning quite as many games in the regular season every year, but you are talking about several 100 win seasons. You know, like their low watermark is a 95 win year, where you're like, oh, okay. You know, like that's good. Yeah. And
he's have one of those, I think, right?
the weird part of the Astros being the villain here is that they're the team that beats the Yankees every year. Like,
there you go.
Doing the baseball world a favor here and still can't get any love for it.
The only way to beat the evil empire, be more evil.
Yeah, to be the eviler empire, apparently. But like the Red Sox did that for a long time. And now, you know, and now they're back to being the Red Sox, and the Astros are keeping the Yankees from being the Yankees again. We're doing you guys a favor.
Yeah, can't argue with that. Can't argue with the pitching matchup tonight. It's going to be great in Game 4. Christian Javier versus Aaron Nola. Do we get the Aaron Nola that we saw in Game 1, 4 1/3 innings pitched, 5 runs, or the one that pitched against the Houston Astros in Game 1, 60 of the regular season, 6 2/3 innings pitched, 2 hits, no runs, 9 Ks, and AJ, I know you're going to say, yeah, but the Astros were resting their guys. They weren't. That was a full Astros team that he did that against. Which one do you think we're going to see tonight?
Game 1.
Ooh. Yeah, this is which, as like, close as it must be as it can be for the Astros right now.
The Phillies would take Game 1 all over again because they like that end result, but I'll take another lead. Yeah, who isn't better at home?
Astros have a bit of an advantage with Christian Javier because the Phillies haven't really seen him. 2 at-bats for Kyle Schwarber, 7 for Brandon Marsh. He's 4 for 7 with a double as far as facing him, but the dude hasn't given
Brandon up Marsh run. Blows me away. He looks so much like Brent Burns, it freaks me out. Yeah. I just, the whole caveman thing, I just can't get. I'm like, you're in the wrong sport, my man. Put on some ice skates. Let's come to my world.
Yeah, he's an interesting cat for sure. Javier has not given up a run since September 7th, 28 1/3 consecutive scoreless frames. The Astros just can roll.
Well, that's probably going to end.
So you got Noel's going to give up a bunch of. Is it going to be another one of those homer games? Are we going to see a lot of deep balls?
Yeah, probably. It's baseball, baby.
It's baseball. They did not put him in the humidor over there at Citizens Bank Park. So could get very lively tonight. AJ, let folks know real quick if they're baseball only, if they're Rockies only, you might be able to convince them to check out the Avs because they're doing some interesting things right now.
I mean, if you're going to jump on the Avalanche bandwagon, now's the time to do it, guys.
You're also a little bit late, but still.
I was going to say, maybe 6 months ago would have been the time to do it, but this is still going to be a pretty good era for Avalanche hockey. Over at DNVR Avalanche, we are covering the Stanley Cup champs every day. Jesse's in Finland with the team right now. The team is in Finland because it has a couple of Finnish stars. They are participating in the league's global series event, which puts NHL teams in European countries that feature players, like star players from those countries. Both Columbus and Colorado have star Finnish players. Unfortunately, Columbus's star Finnish player is hurt, so it really kind of backfired there. But Colorado's Finnish players are better anyway, so they get to really feature those guys now. It's a good time. It's a good time to come hang out with us over on the beat. You know, we've got a lot of talented people doing a lot of great work, and pods, videos, written stuff. You know, the works, the DNVR experience, and the bar gets pretty crazy during the playoffs, which we are expecting the Avs to return to this year. We'll see. You know, it's a long season, whatnot, but we are expecting them to return and hopefully make another run.
And you guys cover the minors too, which I like that with the Colorado Eagles. Megan Angley,
yeah,
good job. Hey, can you dispel the rumor that the only reason Jesse is over in Finland and not you or Megan or Rudo was because he got closest to the spelling of Reykjavik, the capital of Iceland, which isn't Finland, but somehow that was that it? Was
no.
It a spelling test? A Finnish
no.
spelling test?
It was this is a really sore subject for us. it was we'll just say it was happenstance. Jesse won that lotto there.
Oh, all right. There it was, officially a lotto. Excellent. I gotta re-up my credentials over for the Colorado Eagles so I can maybe go to some Stanley Cup games again next year so I can get in one of these lotteries. I might be the
yeah.
way to go.
Yeah, hopefully if they go back to Europe, we get to go next time.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, at Return of AJ is where you can find him on Twitter and at DNVR_Avalanche. They got the great coverage. We've got our great baseball coverage all about the Rockies, World Series, and just anything and everything having to do with baseball at DNVR_Rockies. I'm at Patrick D. Lyons. And follow Susie. She's there at the World Series in Philadelphia, at the Susie Hunter on Twitter. She's having
fun. I can't
root
against her.
No.
Like, I'll root for the Astros, but in no way do I want Susie Hunter feeling any kind of pain.
Look, I said it on Twitter. She brought Coors Field to the World Series, and 5 home runs last night. Was all the evidence you need. This has been fun, AJ, but unfortunately, you know what they say about momentum? It's only as good as your next show. So we'll see you tomorrow at 11 a.m.